Good morning, everybody. I've never sat in a seat before, and I find it very disconcerting not be able to see everybody on this side of the room. My name is Carol Vaughn. I'm Executive Vice President of the Housing Commission, and I am here today to welcome you on behalf of Rick Gentry. Rick was on his way down and got called back into a phone conference, so may have an opportunity to join us in a few minutes. I don't think that will move. But we appreciate your coming in this morning and being with us as we do our kickoff meeting, if you will, on these important studies that we're going to be doing. I'm going to ask our consultants here to introduce themselves in just a minute. I just wanted to mention the purpose of the meeting and what we hope to accomplish today. As many of you will recognize, this process started last fall, and we're at the point now where we've gone through the development of the RFP and the scope of services that was put together by two groups of stakeholders coming together and identifying the things that were really important to be considered in both of these studies, one having to do with linkage and one having to do with best practices and alternate funding resources for affordable housing. And they are two separate contracts. We have two separate consultants that you'll be hearing from today and also providing your input. And that really is the most important thing today. One of the things that we heard early on in the process is that people want to have an opportunity to have a dialogue with the consultants around what their expectations are, what their experiences were, and not have it filtered through Housing Commission staff or anyone else. So that's what the purpose of the meeting is, to introduce you to our consultants, to have them briefly talk about their work plans, and then to have them hear from you so that your organizations and your points of view are made directly to them. So with that, I'll ask, I think, our consultants to introduce themselves, and then I'll turn the meeting over to John Nash.
Good morning. My name is Tessa Munikio, and I'm a senior associate at Bay Area Economics, and we're working on the Affordable Housing Best Practices Study.
And I'm Paul Penninger with Bay Area Economics. Hello to all of you who I see from other parts of my life today.
Good morning. I'm Paul Amaro with Kaiser Marston Associates. We are doing the linkage fee update study, the Nexus study for the commercial impact fee, I know many of you. We look forward to working with you on this assignment. I'm here in the San Diego office, and my colleague David, who will introduce himself, is in our San Francisco office.
Good morning, everyone. I'm David Dozman. As Paul mentioned, I'm in the San Francisco office, and my role in this assignment will be on the Nexus aspects of our assignment, and Paul really is on the sort of real estate and aspect of our assignment here.
Thank you. And I then will turn the meeting over to John Nash. John is our director of policy here at the Housing Commission and is really the point person, will be the point person going forward for both of these studies. So John?
Good morning, everyone. Can I direct your attention to the agenda? Everyone has an agenda for today. First of all, I'd like to talk about the anticipated milestones. We have a pretty tight schedule, and as a result, the driver of these milestones is basically being able to have the study completed and reviewed and have it presented to both the Housing Commission boards and the Housing Authority and on to the City Council. So the driver was basically looking at those respective dockets and being able to make sure we get them scheduled in time for those to be reviewed by those respective boards. As you see here, we have executed the contract on June 30th. The kickoff meeting is today. And the work period would consist of, has already started actually, July the 1st through September the 30th. And the report from the consultants to the Housing Commission will be no later than October the 1st. And this is where we pick up with the preparation of going before the boards and the Housing Authority and the City Council. But let me point out to you that during the interim of the study itself, both studies, we will be updating you with the progress of the studies. We'll be forwarding to you copies of the update as this study progresses for your comments so that we can get them back and have them under consideration so that everyone is kept in the loop. what we also are asking is make sure that you have signed in, that we have all your contact information so that, once again, we are able to get in contact with you. And I ask that all inquiries go through me, and I will definitely forward it on to the consultants so that they are able to do their work. With that said, I'd like to introduce KMA and have them do their presentation of what you can expect from their study. John.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about the approach and the assignment. There's two very different studies that are going to be underway at the same time. I think many of you are familiar with the existing affordable housing impact fee on commercial development and the prior studies, that the initial study from 1989 that was used in adopting the fee. We're essentially doing an update of that study. There's a very specific scope of services that has asked us to take a critical look at previous assumptions that were used in the study and whether the methodology is still appropriate. In addition, we've been asked to look at the economic impact of the fee on different types of development, which is something we've looked at in previous studies, but specifically in the current context of the economy, look at the potential impacts of the impact fee on economic competitiveness. So those are some of the issues that have been raised that we're going to incorporate into the study. I want to just describe how we're dividing our responsibilities on the assignment. We think there's these two parts of the assignment. David's going to talk about the nexus concept and how he goes about the actual nexus analysis. My role is in the local real estate market and familiarity with local types of real estate development, both on the housing, affordable housing side, and on the commercial development side. So we have that local knowledge of the market and can use that to address some of the questions that have been raised. We'll also be preparing the estimates of affordability gap for the rental housing and for sale housing, which feed into the nexus model. So that's just sort of a very general overview from the San Diego office side. The nexus expertise within our firm has resided in our San Francisco office for many years, and David's going to be the lead on that, so I'll pass it to David.
Thanks, Paul. I think one of the things I just want to briefly touch on at the outset here is just to kind of explain in very much an overview what the conceptual basis for this next analysis is. What the analysis does is look at new workspace buildings, be it a hotel which has certain jobs associated with it or an office building which has certain jobs associated with it, and it looks at those new jobs, and those jobs are at a distribution of different occupations, and different income levels are associated with those occupations, and it produces an income distribution based on those different occupations in the buildings. And it looks at the affordable housing need of those workers falling into the lower income tiers. And you get those in an office building which might have predominantly higher pay levels, you still do get some of the lower tier pay levels based on some of the administrative support occupations and so on. And so our analysis looks at that component of the workforce and the housing needs of those workers and the cost to provide housing for them. And it converts it all into a maximum fee that you could charge on a per square foot basis. And that's the really end product of our analysis. One interim step that we plan to do as part of this work program is to produce a memo that kind of explains the conceptual basis for our analysis and outlines in kind of a very transparent way all the assumptions that go into it so that they can be reviewed by the commission staff and the various interested parties and for review and comment and feedback. So that kind of, in a nutshell, is what the Nexus work program that we have. And as Paul mentioned, and he's separately going to be looking at economic considerations that go into setting the maximum fee level. Our Nexus produces the maximum you can charge, but of course there's many other considerations that go into setting what the actual fee that you charge is. Thank you.
Yeah, and let me add to that. It's a good point. If anyone's familiar with the existing fees and the history of how the fees were established by the council and what our 1989 study demonstrated, the demonstrated maximum nexus is extremely high, and the fee was set at a bare fraction of that amount. And that's not uncommon in other jurisdictions, that the nexus that can be demonstrated is very high. It would be a fee that would be infeasible for any developer to pay, and the fee structure is set with a lot of other considerations in mind. I don't know if we have representatives today from the non-residential building industry. Steve, I know you're with the DIA, which is essentially the residential. Do you cover both? Okay. So for Steve's mind and for others that might have inputs for us, we're very eager to receive any information on economic prosperity or employment trends or prevailing commercial development types. Now, I say that we're based locally. We have a lot of information. We know what SANDAG has and what State Employment Development Department has and so on. But if there's any particular study that the Chamber of Commerce has engaged in or is aware of, anything about economic resuscitation in the current market or specific development types or specific business industries that you think would be relevant to what we're doing, we welcome that input as early in the process as possible. And similarly, on the affordable housing side, that's information we come across all the time. Certainly, when there's been local task force and other endeavors, we're very aware of that. But if you think there is something out there locally or beyond our region that we should be aware of, particular study or strategies that affect what we're doing, we'd welcome that information as well. But other than that, we're really here today to hear any inputs you're going to offer or respond to any questions you have now at the outset of the study. So that's our summary. Thanks.
Thank you. And to introduce themselves again, and from Bay Area Economics.
Good morning, everybody, once again. Let me just, I don't have much in the way of a presentation. I'd mainly like to hear, I think, from you all this morning. But just for those of you who aren't familiar with BAE, Bay Area Economics is an urban economics consulting firm. We're based in the San Francisco Bay Area. That's where our headquarters office is. But we also have offices in Sacramento, in Los Angeles, in Washington, D.C., and a small office in New York. So we work all over the country on a variety of urban economics assignments, mainly real estate, market and financial feasibility analysis, economic development, public-private partnerships, and importantly for this project, affordable housing and housing policy in general. Our assignment, which we're really thrilled to do, is sort of a dream job for a consultant, because what it allows us to do is to take a broad view of housing policy in 18 competitive regions across the country that have been defined by the scope of work for the best practices policy and funding study that we're doing, and look at the best, the most innovative, the most promising financing and other related housing strategies that are being adopted in jurisdictions across the United States. So this is an opportunity to really talk to our clients all over the country, and we've worked in most of the regions that were identified, get up to date on what they're doing in the housing departments and the local housing authorities and other partners who are involved in housing policy, and compile a set of best practices for funding, for land use and zoning, for public-private partnerships, all of the different tools that can be brought to bear to help in the preservation, rehabilitation, and production of affordable housing at a variety of income levels. So we're thrilled to be able to do this. And the objective at the end of the day is that we hope to give you some really practical advice from these best practices from across the country on your own strategies, your own policies, ways that maybe San Diego could be doing some things better, ways that maybe you're already doing things, you know, at the state of the art, and really specific strategies and implementation ideas that can be adopted in the short and then maybe in the medium and the long term, depending on where you are in the real estate cycle. So if you like, John, I can go through our scope of work, but that's the broad summary of it.
I think, looking at the 18 competitive regions, understanding the best practices in financing strategies and in housing policy, and then applying those in a really practical way to what's happening in San Diego and to your current policy and economic and real estate environment.
Very good. Thank you. One of the key things that we like to do is, once again, is capture your input into this process. We really, really welcome your ideas, your comments, and any questions that you have as far as the process and the studies themselves. With that said, we have papers back there for you to write your questions down, and we like for you to submit questions so that we can capture those also, your questions, so we can provide comments. And these also will be distributed back out to the stakeholders and the general public, so you can see what are the questions that were asked and our comments on those particular questions, so that you know that everything's been considered. So the next phase is the question and answer period, and if you do have a question, please fill out the form and proceed to the podium to direct your question to either or both consultants. Thank you.
I think that would be fine, but we do have to, since we are recording, we do have to ask you to use the podium and the mic on the podium, because that's the only way that we can actually capture the question and the comment. And to just reemphasize what John has said, we're looking for questions, but we're also looking just for comments from the audience. I know many of you have participated in some of our earlier meetings and have really made the point that you want to have input in just make some statements around the process and around these studies. So we do welcome that as well. But again, if you would please just go to the podium so that we can record the comments and capture all the questions verbatim.
Just a quick question. What is the background for the study that we're undertaking at the moment?
Excuse me, could you say your name? And
I beg your pardon. My name is Ken Grimes. Hi, Carol. what is the background to the study that's being undertaken right now? It's been 20 years. Is it necessary? Are we legally required to do another study at this time? Has this been requested by the Housing Commission or by the Council? And why are we looking? And at the same time, another question that occurs, a second question, is the other practices in the other 28 cities, I think you said you're looking at? 18. Are those being looked at as supplements, linkage fee, or alternatives?
Thank you, Kent, for the question, for actually giving us an opportunity to cover this ground. The genesis of this whole process was a performance audit by the city's internal auditor of the Housing Commission, and that in that report it identified that the Housing Commission had not in fact offered the linkage fee for review by the council and possible change by the council for the last number of years. That's not exactly accurate, but that was what was reported in the auditor's report. And as the report progressed through the Housing Commission, LUNH, and the City Council, the dialogue around the whole issue of linkage fee became louder and louder, as you might expect. So when we got to Council with the report, the staff response was that we would bring the linkage fee, do the calculations based on the studies that had been performed, and bring the linkage fee forward, but also change the wording of the ordinance to a more realistic approach, because over the years the ordinance had in some ways been ignored, and the council was concerned with that. They didn't want to be not in compliance with their own ordinance or the municipal code. So at the council discussion, we were instructed to not only conduct a complete review of the linkage fee in today's economy, but also to broaden the search, to broaden the review, to include other practices, other best practices, and other possible affordable housing funding sources. I don't recall at any point of the discussion at any of those meetings when it was alluded that we would somehow do away with the linkage fee. The alternate sources of that, that they would be additional to the linkage fee. So that's kind of the genesis of how where we got. And then as we began the process, we realized that there were many, many interested parties both on both sides of the issue around linkage that really wanted to be involved. And we felt that, although clearly it would have been a lot more expeditious just to do it ourselves, that it was important to open this opportunity up to the community that was interested. And so we've gone through a number of meetings culminating in today's. So does that kind of answer your question? Oh, and the 19 areas, competitive areas, actually came from the EDC. That they provided those regions of those cities that we're going to be comparing and gathering information from.
Sorry, that the Affordable Housing Coalition asked me to bring up is that, as you mentioned, we already have a nexus. The council has already found certain things to be true. And in order to overcome what they've already found to be true, I think we need to discuss why you're turning those down. We're very anxious to have a lower charge for companies that provide good-paying jobs. There's a good incentive for good-paying jobs. We think that's a really important part of this. And we would like you to check with other cities and find out how much they're charging and why ours is so much lower and what the difference is and why the difference exists. A couple of things about what you just have brought up. You spoke about how you've been asked to look at the economic impact of the fee on our economic competitiveness. I would ask that you do the opposite as well. We just had two large major companies who said they wouldn't come here because there wasn't housing for their people. That is an extraordinary large cost that people don't consider. So I think we need to consider just as much how not having the fee and not having the affordable housing affects our environment as well. And the other thing which I find to be very pertinent, but which I don't know how you will find it, but the lack of transit here is extremely important because the people who live in our affordable housing don't live near their jobs, and we need to get that housing close to jobs because the transit doesn't exist to be able to get the people to the jobs. And just for the BAE people, a couple of things. The Community Land Trust is something that we find to be an extraordinarily important part of what we're looking for. And it takes a lot of the weight off the city, and we'd like you to look into that. And secondly, you know, you're talking about policies. We have a couple of policies. We have the preservation of our SROs, the preservation of our mobile home parks, but they're not upheld. And so I think that you need to look at how we make sure that our policies are actually upheld, because they are important policies, and they make a big difference if we can make them work. So thank you.
Hi, Jay Powell with City Heights Community Development Corporation. I was at City Hall, working at City Hall with some of the people here bringing the first housing trust fund in. And I guess the thing that it continues to be interesting to me is we went through an extraordinary process, created I don't know how many several different funding sources that were implemented, all those nexuses. Some of you may have been involved in creating those nexuses, and then what we saw in the 90s with the economic downturn was a systematic disassembly of the use of those. And I was at the first stakeholder meeting in this room when this was kicked off, and one of the points that was made, I think, a couple of times had to do with why did we abandon those sources of funds? Why, for example, was the transit occupancy tax abandoned as a source? And when it was abandoned and when it was deleted, it had to do with it's going to be too adverse an impact on our economy. No factor was put in when the economy came back to bring that source back. And all these years, we've lost all that money. And so when you're going to your 18 other cities, this city put in a tremendous amount of work and did an extraordinary job of identifying those sources. back in 89 as well as subsequently. So, you know, you don't have to look very far. I think we all know that we have to reestablish those, and I'm going to encourage you in your studying to show the parallels with what San Diego would have generated if we'd stayed online or if we'd kind of restored some of those particular sources. The whole point and the whole strategy was a little bit so that nobody's ox got too heavily gored. And I think where we're at today is we're down to one source, and we got some people out here who are upset because they feel like their ox is the one that keeps getting hacked at. So we have to get back to where I think the basis of the original study was. I think the other thing that in the background on this, as I understand it, is that there had been some provisions that the fee was supposed to be looked at, the linkage fee, and brought back to the council, and that didn't happen. So there's a loss of income in that respect, too. And I think it would just be helpful to set the context, again, as to what we could have had been generating, and then use that as part of the aspect of moving forward on why we should be in seriously considering reinstituting some of the measures that we were on the right track. We just didn't have the political will to follow through, apparently. And this is what we lost. We lost X number of thousand of housing units because of that. Thank you.
Nico Calavita. Along the same lines, the housing trust fund or the linkage fee has been decreased. It was decreased. It was halved in 1995 or 1996. So it was in response to the recession of that particular time. So here is the housing trust fund being cut in half. Now, what the consultants have said today, and that was part of the discussion, you're going to look at the existing economic environment so that what is shaping up, it seems to be that, well, we cannot raise the linkage fees in this particular environment. So my question, a general question to you, both consultants, is, well, how do we take into account the fact that the economy goes up and down and that hopefully we'll come out of this recession and we'll come into hopefully an expansionary period? So how do we take that into account? Because until now, the linkage fee has responded politically to recessionary periods, but not to periods of expansion. So that, I think, is a critical issue that you need to look at. On a more technical detail, I think this was expressly put into your scope of work, which is to look at who pays for linkage fees. And as economists, you know that there are three parties who can pay for that. It can be the developer, can be the buyer or the renter of the space, or it can be the landowner. And that is something that in this country we don't look at particularly, but certainly European countries, that is part of the planning culture, that land should perhaps make to pay for some of the costs that we incur as a result of policy making. So have you thought about it? Is this a kind of question that you have had to answer in other studies of this type? Again, the idea is that when a piece of land is rezoned, the value of the land will increase as a result of that particular decision, that when freeways or the public facilities infrastructure are built, the value of land increases, and that is public money that is put there. So the idea is, especially in European countries, as I mentioned, is that some of that increase in land value is due to public actions of different types, and therefore some of that perhaps should be recaptured for the public benefit. But that it connects to what is referred to as the incidence controversy in this country especially, which is who pays for the cost of inclusionary housing, who pays for the cost of linkage fees, and so on. So that's, to me, is an essential question. Before you start doing all your analysis and studies and so on, I think it's important to answer that question, especially under a inflationary period, under the period of expansion. Is it possible to recapture that? Is that
mode, or is better or is more feasible in periods such as this one, where landowners are trying to sell land and they don't expect the land values to increase, and therefore they might be convinced to bargain to lower land prices. But again, the basic question is who pays? And I hope that you can at least preliminarily answer that question.
It'd be great if I could. So, Tom, one second, let me respond. Nico, we are addressing the various issues you described. Just a couple of thoughts to set context. The current maximum fee is, I believe, $1 per square foot of building area. $1.06. Okay. If we express that, if we had to amortize that annually, the carrying cost of $1 is 10 cents a foot, approximately. And if we had to express that as a monthly rent, that's a penny per foot per month. So it, by any measure, the current fee is extremely low. It's very difficult to detect its impact on the feasibility of any kind of development because it's something plus or minus a penny's monthly carrying cost per square foot. Now, the Nexus comes out with conclusions that are a lot higher than $1, and so we have to address those and, you know, make that information available to the decision makers when they're making a determination on setting the fee. One of the questions we've been asked is this question of the rise and fall of the economy and whether there are indices or triggers that could be used for the fee to adjust under certain conditions. So we're going to look at what other cities have done, if other cities have indeed tied a fee like this to some sort of index. And regardless of that, we're going to identify some possible indices that the city could choose to use if it wants to set the fee that way. That does exist now for the inclusionary in lieu fee. It is reset each July 1, I believe, based on a formula that is generally not discretionary. You put in certain basic assumptions and you get the new fee. And the goal would be if the fee were to be adjusted on some sort of automatic method, it would be adjusted without dispute. It could go up or down, exactly, as the inclusionary in lieu fee has done. Right? It's not so great to come up with a trigger that creates a new discretionary action or creates a big controversy. That's probably not the best outcome. But again, that would be a policy call for the decision makers if they want to include that kind of adjustment. So we are definitely going to be looking at that. Ultimately, our view is that any exaction comes out of the land. It depends on the cycle in the transaction. You know, if there's a transaction underway already or an entitlement process underway. But ultimately, any exaction has an impact on the land value. So the landowner, the land seller, is the one who ultimately we think is bearing the burden. And in a rising market, the land seller is reaping less appreciation and value because a new exaction was introduced or an exaction increased. In a declining market, a new exaction could cause him not to sell his property because the buyers are not going to offer an adequate price to make him want to sell. So we will address that issue, but we're not going to be preparing an economic model on landowner versus building developer versus owner-occupant user who bears, but we'll address it conceptually. Okay. Send any input through John. We appreciate that. Okay.
I was going to make a quick comment. I think Paul just put that perfectly. I would just add one thing, which is that one of the things that we'll do in looking at 19 competitive regions and their central cities and best practices in all of these regions is to analyze and document the kind of state-of-the-art in what's being termed public benefits impact analysis. So in many places that we work now, we are being asked by our clients to quantify the economic benefit of various land use and zoning and other public interventions and to document what kinds of fees or other public benefits can be gained from land use and zoning decisions, not necessarily related to housing always, sometimes related more to economic development and community development and very often infrastructure. things like parks, open space and recreation. But we will be looking at that in the context of housing and definitely also looking at these various schemes that are being explored around the country in terms of setting up indices and triggers for reassessing or recalibrating commercial linkage fee programs and inclusionary fee programs.
Tom Scott, San Diego Housing Federation. For KMA, I just want to reemphasize this need to look at indices and triggers to make sure that, because right now, I mean, there's general agreement that we shouldn't be raising the fee today in this environment, but that I think it would be best for everyone, including the developers, if they can expect when the fee might go up, and the fee should go up, I think, and your analysis will show that, and I would hope, and that we can at least get back to where we were when it was reduced before the last recession, before the last, at the end of the last recession. And it's fascinating, you look in the ordinance, the current ordinance, it says the fee today is supposed to be going up every year by the construction monitor cost index. I mean, that's in the ordinance today, and it's never been applied, which is kind of funny. But so we definitely would hope that that would get some attention as well, that that has been there in the past and for some reason hasn't been applied. For as far as BAE, one of the things we want to make sure is that in looking at these best practices and comparing regions, you're also comparing housing production, the housing, you know, the affordable housing production in each of these areas, what's it been using these policies, what has been, what's been the overall housing market, and how does it affect, you know, there's a range of affordability in each of these regions in terms of rents and which are, rents are primary, you know, for the serving low-income workers, especially rents are more important. And the rents vary, and housing markets vary. I mean, Texas hasn't seen any appreciation in their housing development all these years because they just keep growing out, and Arizona didn't see it until just the last couple of years. So very different housing markets, and I would hope that you take that into account when comparing what the production has been of affordable housing and how it, some relative measures with both within regions and between regions. I hope you're going to be including some of the private efforts, like the Santa Clara Trust Fund and regional best practices. And so those are the main points that I want to make sure that you guys are covering.
That's really my answer.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? In the audience. There goes one. Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to do at this time, I'd like to introduce our CEO, President CEO, Mr. Rick Gentry.
Thank you, John. I'll keep this very brief. Sorry I missed the opening a few minutes ago. It's one of those days where there's more to get done than there's time to do it, which is pretty normal. But thank you all for coming. This meeting this morning serves as a kickoff to the process, to this stage of the process. And what we at the Commission are trying to do is to make sure that we provide the opportunity for those of you who are affected by this to talk directly to the folks that we've hired to put together what the Council has charged us with to do here. So I would encourage you to, if you've not already stated your opinion or your interest or your concerns, to do so. And as the process unfolds over the next few months, we will for sure keep you informed. One of our intents when we started this a year ago was to make sure that we formed a stakeholders group that would reflect a number of different perspectives and a number of different points of interest and a number of different both positive and negative concerns about the issue at hand. So our intent here is one of communication, is one of input, and is one of making sure that we've got a tent big enough that everyone who has an opinion can express it and have that opinion be heard by the people doing the work. So I thank you, as in meetings in the past, thank you for coming. Yes, sir. Yes.
Thank you for indulging me. One last comment. Affordable housing development over the past few years has really grown, of course, not commensurate with need. But a lot of the affordable housing, mostly affordable housing that's provided is, of course, rental housing. And that rental housing is placed for economic reasons and all kinds of other reasons disproportionately in disadvantaged communities. And I think one of the alternative strategies that would be interesting to look at would be community land trusts and limited equity co-ops as vehicles to promote homeownership in disadvantaged communities to address the adverse impact on some of our disadvantaged communities that already have a lot of affordable housing. And this has been, a long-term issue for the Housing Commission. It's been a long-term struggle for some of these communities. If there's other vehicles like the ones I've mentioned that can promote homeownership in those communities, I think that would be a very useful strategy for the Housing Commission to explore. Thank you. I'm Ken Grimes.
Any other comments this morning?
No. just can make me think about the issue of regional housing, job housing balance, or job housing fit, as now has been defined, to take into account that, yes, you might have, you know, 1.5 jobs for each household in a particular area, but the housing might not be affordable for the people working in that particular area. So I just wonder, also in light of SB 375 and the advisory group for SB 375, let's talk about job housing fit. I just hope that you will, even though it's the city of San Diego who's hiring you, but perhaps you can bring up the more regional issue of job housing fit in your analysis, that other cities, especially in the northern part of the region, should take more of a responsibility and provide affordable housing, because that's where most of the jobs are being created.
At further risk, any other comments before we close? Thank you all for coming. We'll make sure you're advised as we process this thing out. Thank you very much.